Hello there, this is John Coleshaw, and I'm just slightly borrowing the voice of John Pertwee for a moment. I don't know, maybe a regeneration might happen. Yes, it happened there. Yes, and you're listening to The Sirens of Audio. Wonderful chaps. Both of them.
G'day, audiophiles. This is The Sirens of Audio. Welcome back. It's the podcast that explores the universe of Doctor Who and the audio medium. My name's Dwayne.
And my name's Philip. G'day, audiophile. G'day, Dwayne. How are you?
I'm very, very well.
Good. It's been a lovely season, hasn't it?
It has, actually. Here in Tassie, it's been very, very good. We've actually had a decent summer for a change. And we were able to host the Ashes, which we won.
Yes, but we appreciate all you UK listeners, and we know it was hard for you, so sorry.
On the day of recording, yes, we won the Ashes. There you go. In my home state. All right.
I think they'd actually been won a couple of weeks ago, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I think that's the case.
It's just the whitewash finish today.
Yeah. All right, we're going to be talking with a very special guest shortly, which, if you've read the title of this episode, you probably know by now. We're going to be talking with Third Doctor himself, Tim Treloar. So very excited about that, Philip.
Yes, indeed. Having a chance to speak to a doctor.
Yes. Yes, it is very good to speak to a doctor. But before we do that, I sense something approaching. You know what that is?
No, what is it, Dwayne?
It's a rabbit hole. Here we go. Philip, for a bit of an experiment this time, well, it's not really an experiment, it's a moment of desperation. I've not been able to think of a rabbit hole subject for a change, so I want you to throw one at me.
Oh, seriously?
Yes. I told you you're going to have to think fast.
Okay. So, what I want to know is, what was your earliest memory of the Third Doctor?
Oh, that is an excellent question. My earliest memory of the Third Doctor. When I was young, so maybe 3-4 years old, I was in hospital for some time. I had to have some surgery. A couple of times I went in. And on one of these occasions, maybe both, my dad hired a television. He used to come and visit me after work. So it would have been in the evenings when Doctor Who was on. Now, don't ask me why in the late 70s that's what was on, but it was definitely the Pertwee era. Must have been being repeated at that time. And my first memory is episode 2 of Spearhead from Space. So, you know, when Ransom goes into the factory and dummy walks down behind, and the cliffhanger is that shot of Ransom's face, like in utter horror. Now, for me as a 3 or 4 year old, that conveyed to me such a feeling of horror that, but in a safe and good way, if that makes sense, that I was hooked from then on. So he came back and watched those episodes. So I still remember seeing the shop window dummies episode that was to come a couple of days later. Sorry, UK fans, we got it every day here in Australia for many, many years. So yeah, Spearhead from Space. Other notable stories for me over that time would have to be Curse of Peladon. I'm always a sucker for Curse of Peladon, and hopefully by the time this podcast is out, the Peladon box set's been released, and I've been able to have a chance to listen to that. I'm very, very excited about that being released this month. Mm. But I also used to have a cassette recorder, I think when I was in about grade 6, I would have been in the early 80s, and I used to put my tape recorder next to the speaker, just like they did back in the 60s. That's how we've got all the audios and animations. And I did that for a couple of episodes of the Silurians. So episode 5 and 7 on one cassette. For some reason, I missed episode 6, but I've listened to those episodes more times than I can think. Also, a couple of episodes of Invasion of the Dinosaurs I had on cassette as well. So, yeah, the whole Pertwee era, he is my doctor. So I'm very glad you asked that question. Yeah, lots of good memories.
It's sometimes quite freaky how much we have in common sometimes, Dwayne. I think I've mentioned that I started watching Doctor Who in hospital as well. So
No?
I've not told you this?
No. That's new.
No, so I was in year 5. I had my appendix out.
Right.
And so the boy in the bed next to me watched Doctor Who every night. And so I was watching Doctor Who. And at that stage, I think it must have been... It's around the Mask of Mandragora, maybe a bit earlier than that. But I do remember that it was halfway through a show, and I'd watched a couple of episodes, and so when I got out of hospital, I kept watching it. So, yeah, the reason I first saw Doctor Who was because I was in hospital with the person next to me watching it on his TV, and I got into it that way, and then continued watching it forever. And so, yeah, so my first John Pertwee was Spearhead from Space. At that stage, I had no idea about regeneration, had no idea what was going on. And, you know, so I had for years thought, well, for a long time, thought John Pertwee was the Doctor after Tom Baker. Because that was the order that I, you know, I saw Tom Baker, then I saw John Pertwee. So my understanding was, so it took me a long time to actually piece together what was going on. And I still remember John Pertwee regenerating into Tom Baker. And when he was lying on the floor, I couldn't quite recognize who it was.
Because of the perm.
Because the perm and just the way it was lying back. So with Tom Baker, even that episode, which ended in the climax with regeneration, I was waiting to see who the new Doctor was. And so it wasn't until the next episode of Robot Start and then Tom Baker gets up. I went, oh, hang on a second, I know him. And that's when it all started to fall together, what had gotten in place. But I used to also put my tape recorder next to I had a black and white TV in my bedroom. So we had the colour TV in the lounge room. I had a separate black and white TV with a tape recorder.
My bedroom TV was black and white too.
And I used to have 90-minute tapes. And so as long as you cut off the
credits,
yep. You could actually fit more episodes in.
Yep.
And
I did the same.
So yeah, so that's how I managed to. And I had a lot of stuff on there, which I just listened to over and over again. And I suspect that's part of the reason I still love audio. Is because to me, these Doctor Who shows were relived over and over again in audio. So I watched them once, but the audio is what kept it alive. And so I knew what was going on.
That's unreal. I love it.
Yeah.
Thanks so much. I should ask you for some rabbit hole topics more often, Philip.
Well, anyhow, Third Doctor, love him.
Awesome. Well, let's talk to the Third Doctor, the current Third Doctor, Tim Treloar, will be back in just a moment.
Coming soon from Big Finish Productions.
Doctor! Missing artifacts. The brig sent him to look into possible theft.
Hardly a job for UNIT.
The Third Doctor Adventures.
Hello, is anyone there? Can you hear me? Over.
Is that the Doctor?
Hostiles detected.
You're looking very smart.
The Doctor won't let anything happen to us. Really, he won't.
Joe? Can you hear me? What's happening? Joe!
Dozens of stone coffins.
Notification. A spacecraft is approaching Docking Bay 3.
This should only take a few moments. We'll have to compensate for the lack of temporal synchromesh, of course. It's just like driving a car in manual rather than automatic.
Doctor, I don't mean to sound critical, but that's space on the other side of those doors, isn't it? Empty space.
Quite right. Good grief.
Oh, there's another stone robot!
3 moons and an asteroid belt, far too much to ask.
Language assimilated.
What in heaven's name are those things?
Those, Mike, are Atto eels.
Huge.
Very dangerous.
That's what the first one said.
I think we should get out of here before it attacks us too.
You may enter Docking Bay.
According to this, the Earth Empire has arranged a political marriage between the two leaders.
Please notify Lady Gwerlin that our useless and pointless security consultant has arrived.
Acknowledged.
Excuse me. Woman with reputation in ruins coming through.
Yes, this is Captain Yates. Put me through to the Brigadier, would you?
The whole future of this sector of the galaxy is at stake.
Organic life forms detected.
The Delphons.
Let's get going. There's no present like the times, there.
Big Finish. Recreating an era.
It's my great pleasure to welcome to the Sirens of Audio, Tim Treloar. Welcome, Tim.
Thank you for having me.
It's a privilege. It's great to have an actual doctor on the show.
De facto, as they say.
Before we get into that, though, can you tell us a little bit about your where you grew up and your family life?
Well, I grew up in South Wales, a town called Bridgend, which is between Cardiff and Swansea, in rugby country there. And I moved to Kent with my family. My dad was in special education, so he got promoted. And so we all relocated to near Dartford in Kent when I was 14. And then I became a civil servant for a bit, but I was doing amateur dramatics at the time. And I started getting very pleasant reviews, and I decided to go to drama school when I was at the late age of 28, so for 3 years. Put myself in poverty. So
what were you doing in the civil service?
I worked for what was then called the Lord Chancellor's Department, which is now the Ministry of Justice, I think. I worked in the Criminal Court Service, and I managed the offices there, and then I became a clerk of the court at the Old Bailey, Central Criminal Court, which is the foremost famous court in Britain. All the big cases have been there, all the big horrible murder and terrorist and awful cases there. So that was a fascinating and quite gruesome sometimes experience.
So I guess there's a lot of material there for any of your writing projects these days.
Well, there certainly is, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it's weird though. When you're there, you tend to bury the details of what you're doing, and it kind of just comes out in sort of a gallows humor, really. It was some incredible experiences there, and some pretty awful cases. But yeah, it was a very interesting time.
So how did you get into amateur dramatics?
Well, it was weird because when I went to comprehensive school, I hated drama. I didn't like it at all. I was very embarrassed and very shy, and I didn't want to be performing. And then a friend of mine, Will, who's always an actor, he said, oh, there's this amateur dramatic group. Do you fancy it? And I was like, well, why? And he goes, well, there's girls there. So we joined the Hexley Players, they were called, which were the village amateur group. And it was full of basically, well, at the time they were all everyone was in their 70s. All these people who fought in the war. And so we'd hear all their war stories. But we were 14 and we were playing the leads. We were playing all the romantic leads. We were playing sort of 30-somethings engaged to these older women. And so it was 14-year-old boys playing sort of the romantic leads there. It was a lot of fun. Really, that was a lot of fun. Great experience. They should do a comedy drama about that.
Well, you just need to write it.
I think I do, actually. You know what? It's just put an idea into my head. Yeah. Because there were some amazing characters there.
So was the hard choice going from what was a fairly stable career and making some good money to going into acting? What did your family think about that?
Well, I wanted to when I was 18. I wanted to go to become an actor, but my parents thankfully talked me out of it because I think I was too, I would have been a bit too immature, I think, at the time to do that. So I got a stable job, but then my girlfriend at the time, she was a student and she was sort of regaling me with all these stories of student life, and the local press were being very nice about my work. And I just thought, well, why not? I'm going to have your one life. So I sold up. So my flat, didn't make much profit. I wrote thousands of begging letters to try and get money, because in England, the drama school system at that time, you couldn't get a grant for it. So it was fee paying. I think it still is. And so I have a lot of money. So basically I managed to raise the money for the first year. And then luckily the college gave me help for the second and third years. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to complete it, I don't think. But yeah, that was a great experience as well.
So you chose Lambda. Was there a reason why you decided that's where you wanted to study at?
That's why I got in. I got into Lambda. So yeah, that's the one I chose. I'm glad I did. It was a really terrific experience. At the time, I didn't think so. But, you know, especially when you're living on a pack of crisps a day. But, it was a really, really great, happy time, you know, very positive and very hopeful time.
Is there anyone in the acting or comedy industry that inspires you?
Well, a lot of people do, but I think it's like most jobs. I think when you're in the job, you don't get starstruck, you know, by people in the same industry because they're the same as you. I mean, when you meet them, they're just normal people. But obviously, there are a lot of people I watched. I mean, David Troughton was one of the early ones I watched when I went into the Royal Shakespeare Company about 6 months after graduating, and he was playing a lot of the big parts. And obviously, you know, David Troughton, the connection. And I used to watch him. Because he was very physically and he was a lot like me, I think. And so I used to watch him and learned a lot from him, but a lot of the other older actors as well. But, you know, I've met some, you know, I've worked with Patrick Stewart for a long while. And
for Doing Macbeth.
Yeah, we call it the Scottish play. Yeah, we're not allowed to say Macbeth. Oh, I just said it. There we go.
You can't say it. You can't say it in a theatre. You can say it outside the theatre.
Oh, you can. I know. I think it's just ingrained in us. I know. I don't go in for all that. But we meant to say the Scottish play. Yeah.
That production was amazing.
Oh, did you see it?
I have seen it. Yeah, a film version. I didn't get to see it live.
Oh, the film version. Yeah, it's great. It's a great film. They did that with two cameras in 3 weeks, which is an incredible achievement for something that was on location. That was great. We did that. Where did we do it? We started that in Chichester, and then we went to the West End, and then we went to the Brooklyn Academy of Music. And while we were there, we got terrific reviews in the New York Times. So suddenly we were told, would you like to stay another 9 weeks on Broadway? So I lived in New York for 4 months, and that was just an amazing experience, you know. For all the unemployment you have as an actor, there's so many amazing experiences that sort of make it all worthwhile sometimes.
Does Broadway pay better than the London stage?
Yeah. Yeah, but we weren't on what Broadway actors would have been on. We were on a sort of, they worked out something. But yeah, still, look, I'm not complaining. They put us up in very nice hotels. We were treated really well. You were given money to live on as well. So I didn't spend any of my wages, and that's the first time I was able to save anything.
Wow. In New York?
In New York as well, yeah. Well, it was great. And, you know, at the time, I think it was $2 to the pound at the time.
Wow.
So, we lived like the life of Riley. It was just, it was a brilliant experience. Really, really enjoyed that. I'm talking about all the positive experiences, but usually the life of an actor is it can be quite abject. But that was a lovely experience, as was coming to Sydney, as I mentioned to you earlier.
Yeah, somewhere, tell us what you're doing in Sydney.
I did a play called King Charles III, which was, it was a modern play, but written in Shakespearean verse. And it was about the present Prince Charles becoming king. And him refusing to I can't remember. It was a big debate about the freedom of the press, basically. And in the end, he has to abdicate. Basically, it's a brilliant play written by a fantastic playwright, Mike Bartlett, who's one of our biggest playwrights. And so I was in Sydney for a month doing that. I had a wonderful time, and then I decided I'd take a little holiday, and I went to Cairns for a week and did the Reef, which again alongside the Grand Canyon is the most amazing thing I've ever seen. I did the rainforests and got jumped out by a snake, and then I went to the South Island, New Zealand, drove around that for 3 weeks, which again it was just an incredible experience.
So you've worked across all mediums, TV, theatre, audio, movies. What enjoyment do you get out of those individual mediums that you don't get in the other mediums? There's a question for you.
That's a good question. Theatre is obviously got the live experience, the interaction with the audience. You can change your performance every night, obviously until you get bored. If it's too long a run, you can easily get a little bit sort of war-weary. TV, the money's better. You get picked up in the morning. You get fed. Same with film. Audio is different. Audio is a different skill again because it's not just about speaking into a microphone. It's you've got to convey something through to an audience via their ear. And that's a different skill. Same with voiceover acting generally. And then you've got corporate role play stuff, which is different. That's more business orientated. So they all have different, I mean, that's the great thing about this, you know, working is the variety. However, it's when you work, you know, a lot of the time is not working, like now, for instance. And this time of year, January, is quite quiet. So unless you're casting something before Christmas, then you might have a long wait. So, but you know, it's ups and downs, isn't it? You got to try and remain positive, really.
I saw that you were a vocal coach for Robert Downey Jr. Is that right? What was all that about?
Yeah, that was an experience and a half. I got my agent got a phone call saying Robert Downey Jr. was doing Doolittle, and he was doing it in a Welsh accent, and he wanted an actor to do it to help him with the accent as opposed to a vocal coach, because he wanted to get his brief was he wanted a mad Welsh actor, right? So whether I take it a compliment or not, I got asked to do it. So basically, yeah, so I worked with him for on and off for a few months doing that and helping him with his accent, which I think, and most Welsh people I know think, is really good. I mean, I know the film, the critics weren't too keen on the film, but I think for what they achieved in so short a time was tremendous. And I think his accent actually, and honestly, I've asked Welsh friends of mine, and they go, yeah, yeah, it's good. You know, the Welsh accent's the hardest one to do. There's no doubt about that. That and the South African, they say. But I thought he did tremendously well. Amazing.
Was his performance actually just your performance? Did he just copy you what to do and then he just reproduced you?
Well, you can't. You know, it's Robert Downey Jr. Basically, he's one of the greatest actors there is. So, you know, no, I don't think he was reproducing me, but he's a lovely, lovely man. Well, one of the kindest, most empathetic, most generous man I've ever met, actually. I think he was brilliant. I mean, he's an incredible actor, isn't he? So yeah, so I just helped him, really. I helped him with sort of, I was a Welsh consultant, I was called. So, and I was in the film as well. I played the whale in there. And yeah, that was great. Sort of going back and forth to LA and working in London or Shepperton. So yeah, that was a great experience. And yeah, as I say, if you ever wondered, he's a really, really great, wonderful man.
I only watched that a couple of months ago with the kids, so I'll never be able to look at it the same now.
No.
In a good way.
Yes. Yeah.
What is it? Just me, or is the Welsh accent? Does it lend itself to comedy more than any other accent? When I was in Cardiff, I was looking around at a few Doctor Who sites. I caught a cab from the city where I was staying down to the waterfront in Cardiff, and the cab driver was complaining to me. He was deadly serious about all these things he was complaining about. But I was sitting there just giggling. I was trying to hold my laughs in because it just sounded so funny to me. What is it about the Welsh accent that's so funny?
I don't know. It's not the, I mean, you'd say possibly comedically, I mean, the Birmingham accent would be easily, or the Scottish accent would be, you know.
But what it is, it's like, it depends on the accent, right? It's so up and down and so sort of sincere, you know, we see in it. It's, you know, I think it's the more seriously you take themselves, I think the funnier the material will be, you know. So
Yes, very funny. You get characters everywhere, don't you? But yeah, somewhere like Cardiff, there's a lot of characters, a lot of big characters in Wales. Which is probably the Celticness, isn't it, of the people there. I guess, yeah, I can see what you mean about it being a... Yeah, it lends itself to comedy quite well. But again, you know, ideally, I think a lot of accents do. A lot of city accents especially, you know, and especially a cab driver. I played a Welsh cab driver in something once, I think. But I don't think it was funny. But, yeah, I know what you mean, though.
It depends what he's saying. Like, you know, he's like from there.
Well, Cardiff's more like that. So someone from Cardiff's going to watch this now and go, no, it's not.
It's Saturday night tea time in 1977 all over again.
It may be irrational of me, but human beings are quite my favourite species.
Coming soon from Big Finish Productions, The Fourth Doctor Adventures.
Dear me, things don't seem to be going awfully well on Nerva.
Fire!
Hang on!
I'm getting a strange reading on the decon filter.
Doctor?
Nerva. Nerva.
Don't let him in.
And what on earth is that?
Well, I'm the doctor. This is Leela.
And I would advise you all to keep back.
He needs to be quarantined.
Leela.
We're looking for a stolen spaceship. Ring any bells?
You know this place?
Well, I Nerva.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Doctor Who. Destination Nerva.
Brilliant.
Return to Nerva.
So the first... job I think you did for Big Finish was with Tom Baker. Is that right?
Sure.
Baker story. Did you know much about Big Finish beforehand? And I guess were you a Doctor Who fan at all? Or
I was when I was a kid. I was a Tom Baker fan. Tom Baker was my doctor, and I used to love. Everyone asked me who's your favourite Doctor Who character, and I always say Canine. And I was lucky enough to have met John Leeson several times, worked with him. Yeah, I loved Doctor Who when I was a kid. But then I think I discovered sort of football and girls and music and stuff like that. So I think, because I don't remember the John Pertwee era. I think I was too young for that. So I think I never got over the regeneration, you know, from Tom into Peter. I never got over it because I was like, well, this is not Doctor Who. Doctor Who wears the scarf and eats jelly babies. So I don't think I ever got over that. And also, I never
7 years is a long time for a kid, isn't it?
Well, I think so, yeah. But I never liked cricket as well, I think. So with him and his cricket whites, I think probably I went there. So the first job, yes, it was Destination Nerva. What had happened is John Dorney, who obviously does a lot with Big Finish, was a couple of years above me in drama school, and we were at a party. And we got chatting and he said, hang on, didn't you win the Carlton Hobbs Award, which is a radio award that the BBC holds for drama school graduates. And I said, yeah. He said, oh, we've got to get you into Big Finish. And I thought nothing more of it. I think I submitted my voice tape or something. And then a few months later, I got a phone call. Do you want to do this Big Finish? Playing this a Victorian zombie lord, who was obviously trying to conquer space, as they do. And so I went down to the studio in Wadhurst, which actually is not that far from where I live now. And so working with Tom, I go, oh my God, it's Tom Baker. I can't believe it. It's Tom Baker. And in the studio, so I was putting this voice on, and sort of very sort of camp, very sort of, you know. And Tom apparently said to Nick Briggs, he said, who's he sound like? He sounds like someone. Nick was going, yeah, I don't know who it is. And then he went, oh, it sounds like John. And I think that then germinated the idea of, you know, obviously I think a respectful period had passed since John Pertwee's passing. And I think they were ready to sort of maybe regenerate, if you like, the early doctors. And so they asked me to do it. There are a couple of lines in, I think it's The Light at the End. And I think from that, I was in New York, actually. I got a phone call from them saying, would you like to have a pop at the Third Doctor? And at the time, I was working in New York. Yeah, fine. And then when I got back and, right, we're going to record over these few days, I suddenly went, what? hang on. And I start extremely nervous and anxious about it. And obviously knowing the fanatical Doctor Who fan base, as I do now, I wanted to take the opportunity, obviously, and the challenge, but thankfully they put in that narrator part with it. So it was the narrator doing the lines, which sort of eased me into it. And I'm very grateful for that. But then obviously I was on set in the studio with Katie and Richard Franklin, and they were tremendous help for me. You know, they really helped me with the confidence. Because you just realize what a big thing it is for Doctor Who fans, you know, how important it is. So yeah, and every time I do one, I'm never resting on my laurels. I'm always going, right, God, what, you know, it's the same. It's like the difficult second album, as they call it, but it's a difficult third album, fourth album, fifth album. So it's never something I rest on my laurels about, and I'm very self-critical as well. So that can hit your confidence when you're doing it. But luckily, most of the time I got Katie there, and she's like, "Yes, darling, that's right." You know,
I can say we had Katie on last year, and she was raving about how conscientious you are, how much you focus on your part so well, and she just says she gets lost and feels often that, you know, John's in the room with her. So yeah, she spoke very highly of your professionalism, but also what you also produce as well.
Yeah, she's very nice like that. She says that quite a lot, and I she's so wonderful and she's so kind, and you know what she's like. She's just an amazing human being, isn't she? A ball of energy, and the fans love her, and she's great to the fans, and she's just so kind to people. You know, she's just a lovely lady. You know, she's, when times are down, you know, she's there. She's just full of positivity. But yeah, she's been very, very nice. But she's helped me considerably with it. And she's the one who, when I'm struggling a little bit, she'll go, she'll look at me and she'll do a gesture. She'll do that gesture, or the hands on the hips gesture, and or the hand behind the neck gesture that John used to do. And that'll help me convey the line correctly. Because it's not just about speaking to the mic. I also have to do the gestures as well, you know. No, but she's great. And yeah, she's lovely and a terrific actress, obviously.
So did you do much research on old Doctor Who episodes or on John Pertwee in general?
Yeah, I did. I did. I was fascinated to learn that apparently he was on HMS Hood, and he was on leave, or he was put onto another ship when it went out and it was sunk, and obviously only three people survived. And he used to give briefings to Churchill, I've heard. I don't know how true that is. And I know he was a comic actor. And so he took Doctor Who very, very seriously because it was his first straight role. And so, yeah, I did a lot of research really on him, and also his mannerisms and voice, because I can't do an impression of him. But basically it's getting his, you know, it's sort of very, he's got that sibilant S, and he's very sort of precise. And so it was watching him and watching what he does as an actor. And so Katie was helping me with that. She was giving me all these stories about him. So he was very nervous when, you know, he was given a lot of S's in his sentences and he couldn't remember his lines a lot of the time. So he drilled them. And so I got to understand a bit more about his process. And then I watched The Mutants to Death and The Planet of the Spiders. But my favourite, I went to Devil's End last year, let's put it that way. So I can't remember the name.
The Demons.
The Demons, or The Daemons, is it? He says The Daemons, doesn't he? The Doctor says Daemons. That's my favourite Doctor Who story of all time. I absolutely love that. So basically, yeah, before I record, I watch stuff. And when I go into the studio, I've got stuff on my phone. When my voice starts to go a little bit, I listen to him again on my phone. But it's about trying to understand his process and his delivery, as opposed to doing an impression.
It struck me, looking at the homepage on your personal website, that you've got a lot of characters there on the screen that you're into, and that seems to be what you like to do. It reminded me a lot of John Pertwee, because that's what he was most comfortable doing too. I think he was probably least confident in being himself.
Yeah, a bit like Peter Sellers. Yes. But I mean, yeah, I think I've borne 30 years too late, though. There's so many actors around now that you're very rarely asked to play something that's not you. You know, if you're like just a jobbing actor like myself, you're very asked to play something that's not your type. So, I think it's that's my amateur dramatics background, I think, coming in. I like to play different characters, totally different characters that are not on my centre. But unfortunately, you don't get the opportunity for that much nowadays that you would have done in the past, because in the past, obviously, theatre was the prime sort of genre, you know. And so theatre, if you were a good theatre actor, then you've got the parts on TV and film, but that's not the case now. But yeah, I love to try and play different characters if I can, because otherwise I'm just going to get cast as coppers and wife beaters looking at me. So, or criminals. So yeah, I do like to do that. And if I get the opportunity, particularly in theatre, then I like to do something that's not me, you know. Yeah. But you get discouraged from doing that, really. They want you to be more you.
I guess that's why a lot of actors enjoy audio so much, because you can play characters that aren't your type.
I should have mentioned that when you were asked about the different, the joys of playing different mediums. Yeah, that's one of the things with audio. You can play anything, you know, human or non-human.
Yeah.
So,
or zombie and Victorian.
Invent something yourself, you know, and that's the great thing about audio. So, yeah.
All your early roles in Big Finish were all baddies. Like,
yeah.
all these strange, awful characters, yeah. And villains being brought back. I know.
Yeah, it was great fun.
Speaking of confidence in the studio, how did you feel when John Coleshaw came along? Someone that you know can do a very good Third Doctor impression as well.
Yeah, he can. I've told him if I see him at the top of some stairs, he better hold on to the handrails, because I might give him a nudge. I love John. John is a lovely, lovely man. Oh, he's such a kind gentleman. And he's not only, obviously, probably our best impressionist, isn't he? I don't know. If not the best, he's certainly up there. And he's also, you know, a really good actor. He's actually a really, really good actor as well. Yeah, he does. Obviously, his fourth is Doctor is legendary, which is tremendous. I get him to do that all the time. And he loves doing it. I always say to him, John, do that. He'll happily do it. He actually recorded for my mate's 50th birthday party. I said, look, John, I hate to ask you, but I can't go to the party. You could do a little recording. I hate to ask you. I'm so embarrassed. Oh, yeah, of course. So he did Donald Trump on his phone for... Yeah, he's just a lovely, and he's like that all the time. He's like what he is when you see him in the public face. He's just a lovely man. And yeah, I've heard his Third Doctor. Yeah, it's terrific. And I'm also, when he does that, I'm going, shut up, stick to the fourth of the Brigadier. But no, it's great walking with John. Again, you know, it's a lovely addition to the team. You know, whereas it was just me and Katie, now we've got obviously John, and we've got Daisy as well, and we've got Sadie. So, yeah, it's great. It's great having John there. And he's great. He's a great laugh. He's a great lad. Really like John.
From Big Finish Productions, Doctor Who, The Third Doctor Adventures, Volume 7. The Unzar Incursion.
All personnel, stand by for satellite response efficiency test.
Drop your weapon.
I'm an old soldier. It's very difficult to teach me new tricks.
Doctor, activate receptor coils.
Activating receptor coils?
You against the machine.
Full activation!
I think you'd find the results enlightening.
Good work, Sergeant.
They reckon you're a space wizard or something.
Do they indeed?
But the Doctor is dangerous.
He's just one man.
Well, let's just say I'm a scientist without a portfolio.
What the devil do you think you're doing?
International pressure points are being neutralized.
Excellent.
By the way...
Hey!
Whoa!
Doctor, the door!
Right behind you! Both of you, grab onto the console!
Doctor, this is insane!
I said I'd never go near this traffic contraption.
They're coming through!
Hold on as if your life depends on it! Because it does!
Doctor!
The Doctor and UNIT will be in no position to stand in our way.
The Gulf.
Look at the light of the moons.
the way it skims the waves. It makes them look like mounds.
Maybe the Brigadier left the taps running.
You'd need to leave them running for an awfully long time, Sarah. This is an ocean world.
Just think of the water bill.
It's lovely to see you.
Is it?
Of course it is. Such a delight to see new faces.
I may be able to help.
But we don't need any help, Doctor.
I hope not.
I'm sorry.
No ships, no radio. You may be self-sufficient, madam. But if something goes wrong, you're very much on your own out here.
It's coming inside.
The sea screams at night.
What are they? Sirens? Mermaids? But they're worse than that. Are those tendrils? Tentacles?
One false move and...
It's going to collapse!
I know it hurts, but I can ease the pain.
I focus all my mental strength. I break away from this dimension.
Big Finish. We love stories.
Speaking of Sadie and Daisy, do you find yourself more in the... You're not the newbie anymore. You're sort of there helping these guys. Is that what it's like for them with their confidence levels too, coming in playing these roles that their mums used to play?
Oh, I don't need to help them. They're both confident, the girls. I'm joking. And no, of course, they initially were like, you know, this is all new. But yeah, they're just so good and they just do it so effortlessly. It's fine. When we're in the studio, we just have a laugh. It's great. I mean, unfortunately, over the last couple of years, we've been more and more doing it remotely. So, I've been in the studio in Wadhurst, which is about 45 minutes away, which is the studio Tom uses. And the others are in London or at home, or John sometimes does it from Liverpool. So, yeah, but usually it's great when we've got the team together and we're all together in the same room. It's great. You know, it's brilliant. It's like being with a group of mates. And obviously we take the work really seriously, but there's a lot of laughter, you know, particularly when someone like Katie's around with a filthy sense of humour that we share. Daisy and Sadie are both great. So, you know, they're doing their mum. So it's obviously probably second nature to them.
Yeah.
How have you found the fan reaction to be? Because it was interesting recasting. And I think a lot of people just think that there's no place to recast ever. I must confess that I was very slow to come on to the Third Doctor because I...
How dare you, sir?
Yeah, no, so I actually didn't listen to when it first came out. I didn't buy them. And then listened to, I think, the third box set and went, oh, this is really good, and then went back to the earlier ones. But it's certainly it takes some time for people to swing over. How have you found fan reaction to be?
Well, I completely understand. I absolutely understand. Of course, I'd be the same. I mean, my favourite band, The Jam, which was fronted by Paul Weller, you know, there's a group now called From the Jam, which has the bass guitarist in, but a different singer. And initially I was like, no, that's not them. And now I love them. I absolutely love them. So I guess, yeah, like you said, it's the resistance to it because it's sort of sacrilege almost, isn't it? And yeah, there were a lot of people who were encouraging it, going, yeah, you know, so it's a respectful time and why not? But I can, you know, I do understand completely and sympathize with people who are opposed to it. The fan reaction then when we did it was tremendous and wonderful and really humbling. But of course, there's going to be people who refuse to be interested. And that's absolutely valid. And it's fine. But yeah, more and more people have come over to it after hearing it. And as long as they understand it, you know, I can't do an impression of John Pertwee. That's not what it is. It's about the essence of the era and his doctor and the stories, you know, which are always fantastic. So yeah, the fan reaction generally has been superb. It's been overwhelming actually. And it seems most fans are on board with it. And yeah, it lifts my heart every time, you know, you get the reactions you do. And it's sometimes it's like, oh, they're talking about me. You're in a laugh, aren't you? You know, but it's, yeah, it's great. I mean, obviously, people are like, that's fine. I said, no, you know, everyone's got an opinion and why shouldn't you? You can have what opinion you want, but it's fine, you know. So, but it's been overwhelmingly positive as far as I can see. And that's really encouraging. It helped me.
One of my favourite episodes last year was on the Unit box set where was it? Oh no, it was a River Song box set. River Song, where you were in the final episode and you had an exchange with River in the TARDIS. It was absolutely hilarious. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, did you do that together or was that remote?
That was together.
Yeah.
Went up to the studio in Acton for that. And yeah, that was great because you had obviously Doctor, who's this sort of, man of his time, alpha male, being beasted by these two women and not being able to deal with it. And that was great fun. It was really good fun doing that. And I can't believe they're talking to me like this, you know. And it was a gentle mocking of the era, really, isn't it? Of the attitudes of the era. Because it cracks me up when Princess and the Demons, what did he say to Joe? He said, Did you fail your science as well as your maths or something like that? You know, my dear Joe. That sort of a lovely, sweet, harmless, patronizing sort of, oh God. I've just said, I'm going to get cancelled probably for saying that.
Yeah,
but, I thought it was great fun to do that and sort of mock that sort of male patronage thing, you know. However well meant the Third Doctor's is, hasten to add.
It was interesting because, I mean, Liz Shaw was such a strong character that they actually wrote her off because she was... Yeah, they decided she was too strong a character. We'll get rid of her and put in Katie Manning, who is still a strong character and still brings a lot of, as well as vulnerability, she also brings a lot of strength. I mean, she's rescuing people within the first episode, so people often discount Jo Grant too quickly. But Liz Shaw was such a strong, powerful, scientific, smart character. Sure. It's lovely to see that they've brought back that character with all her same strength and dynamic. And so the love of the area, I mean, the whole River Song box there where you've got River and Liz being two very strong, powerful women in the 70s. It worked. And just the way they deal with the Brigadier as well, the whole set just is actually, it's a homage and a love of the era and saying what was good and still bringing out.
They were strong women, for God's sake, even then, you know.
Yes, bizarre.
It's bizarre. How bizarre. Suddenly, of course, you're like, well, Margaret Thatcher. I mean, did we say more?
Mum.
You know, say again.
Mum. I was scared to death.
Well, exactly. My mum as well, you know. Of course, but obviously, the opportunities weren't the same as they are becoming now. And but of course, they were still strong, intelligent, very brave women about. I mean, Amelia. We could go on. Amelia Earhart. You know, your go. Anyone? No? All right.
Nellie Bly.
I'm joking. Who?
Nellie Bly.
Who's that? She sounds Australian.
No, she was American, wasn't she, Philip?
She did. She circumnavigated the world in 80 days.
She tried to beat the fictional Round the World in 80 Days.
Oh, really?
Hmm.
Yeah, I've never heard of her. That's my bad. I need to go and probably cancel myself.
Or listen to a Big Finish audio. It's one of the reasons Big Finishes.
Is it in a Big Finish?
Yeah, which a few one? Months ago. What, a few months ago.
Peter Davis.
Oh, okay. All right. Nellie Bly. All right. There we are. Yeah. See, we're digging ourselves into holes here. Well, I'm digging myself into
holes. Yeah, I was going to say, going down. Yeah. Be careful.
Well, the exciting thing about this month, because this is going out in February, this month we've got The Annihilators coming out, which is a very, very exciting release. We had the false cover that we just all thought it was a Third Doctor story. Then all of a sudden we've got the Second Doctor on the cover, played by Michael Troughton for the first time. What was that experience like? Did you do that one together or was that remote too?
I was remote. I was in... I was down here and I think they were up in London or whatever, or some of them at home. That was incredible because obviously Nick had warned me at gunpoint that is completely under wraps, you know, because obviously it's a seven-parter as well. Yeah. And obviously working with Michael, I've worked with Michael before, David Troughton's brother, who I know. So that was great. We had fun doing that. And obviously Fraser was in it, Fraser Hines. Was in it as well as Jamie, and so that was a great sort of crossover between the third and the second. And that was a lot of fun to do that.
How long ago did you record that?
Oh God, a few months ago. I can't remember exactly. It's all the last 2 years just melded into sort of a mush of months. It was a good few months ago. I think it might be September, October. I'm not sure, but Yes, we did. I think we took 2 days to do that. I think 3 days, maybe. 3 days. So that was, yeah, that was great. And obviously, knowing this, you sort of tingle at the secrecy of it all.
Did you get a sense of how Michael was feeling about playing the part?
No, he did. He's just in a completely professional. Well, because he wasn't in the studio with me.
Yeah,
he just delivered, he just delivered his stuff. And he's fantastic. Sounded exactly like the second Doctor. And it was great. He's very professional and very, just doing the job.
Excellent. So you mentioned that the last couple of years have been sort of all merging into one big mashup. What have you been doing to get through the pandemic yourself? What about Peter?
Alcohol.
Peter Peters. Tell us Peter a bit Peter. About Peter. Peter Peters.
Well, I did that during lockdown, during the first lockdown, sort of about May and June last year, and. That was based on some character I'd written something about before, and he's basically a geography teacher who's having a nervous breakdown and is in lockdown and decides that he's now qualified to be a positivity guru. So it's a story that I wish I'd rewritten before I'd sort of broadcast them, because I think the first couple of episodes are very gentle, and I should have put in a more of a big punch straight away, but the story does develop as you go over. It's 10 5-minute episodes, some of them 4 minutes, and it turns into a story about these women, actually. I'm sort of planning doing a second series, which won't just be in the one location this time. I'm thinking of doing something around my local area of Hastings in East Sussex, and using other people in it as well. Where I think he's going to be a men's health guru. So he's going to teach men how to be more vulnerable and more open. Obviously, that's going to go completely wrong.
Namaste. That's hello in yoga, by the way. My name is Peter Peter. Positivity guru, rapidly anti-COVID. Welcome to the course. Now, you may not know much about me yet, but let me assure you, I am my own man. I think for myself. For instance, I am indifferent to Marmite. And this series of webinars, and that's not where you go to learn to be Spider-Man, by the way, I do make the occasional joke, please enjoy them, will teach you how to be positive at this particular time. Well, why would I do that, I hear you ask? Everything's negative at the moment, isn't it, with this bloody virus? I mean, the economy's in a mess. Someone's hoovering up all the own brand custard creams from the local branch of Aldi, and we've got an Home Secretary who can't say her G's, which I find fairly irritating. Well, let me help you to understand, guys. Let me clear this up for you. If you take a standard battery, AA, AAA, no matter, you will see on one end there is a plus sign. That is the positive. On the other end, there is a minus sign. That is the negative. Now, if you put the plus side in your mouth on the top... there's a very sour, bitter, tangy taste. It's very, very unpleasant. But at least you were tasting something. You get nothing on the other end, just the cold indifference of galvanized steel. So it is better to feel something than nothing at all. Lick the batteries, guys. Lick the batteries.
So that's in the plan at the minute, but I did a few things. I did a few theatre things online with a company called Original Theatre Company, who are a touring company, but they've sort of become the innovators in online theatre. So we'd be in our bedrooms or whatever, our back rooms with green screen on, and they'd send us cameras and lighting stuff, and we'd be filming ourselves, and while we're on Zoom as well, doing this play. So it's like almost doing a film at home, but a theatrical sort of film at home. And they've achieved massive things with it. Brilliant stuff. They did Birdsong. They did The Haunting of Alice Bowes, which is an Edgar Allan Poe. And we just done something called Into the Night, which we actually did in a, we just did that. We did this just before Christmas, and it was, we did it, we filmed it in a church hall in South London somewhere. And it's basically to commemorate the 40th anniversary of the Penley lifeboat disaster, which happened near Christmas in 1981 in Cornwall, which is a terrible, but it shows humanity at its best. It's the volunteer, basically, lifeboatmen who went out to try and save this, these people on this tanker. And unfortunately, everyone perished. And but the bravery of these men who went out, oh, it's just astonishing. You know, as volunteers, they went out in the worst storm apparently for 100 years in Cornwall, just off Land's End. And yeah, it's a tremendous story. So we did that recently as well. So I've done that, and I've done obviously a few of the audios, and I've done a few audio books. So I'll be ticking over, but I certainly won't be able to buy a new car for a while. That's for sure. You know, get the floor done, get the floor laminated. Yeah, it's been challenging for our industry, and you know, and it's still not recovered. But hopefully this year, it'll get something like back to normal. But yeah, it's been tough the last couple of years. I've been able to buy booze though, so you know,
that's the main thing.
That's the main thing. You know, I did Dry January a couple of years ago. Never again. They shouldn't do Dry January. It's ridiculous. It's too much pressure. You should do dry April or dry March, you know. I know January's the summer over there, isn't it?
But yeah, we do Dry July. We wouldn't even think about
doing Dry January. Can't do Dry January here.
Yeah. Dry January, I mean, it's ridiculous. Just after Christmas, when you've got no money and there's nothing going on, it's just drab. To do Dry January, it's like ridiculous. But I did it, and I just about lasted the month. But God, did I party after that.
Our entire country shuts down from Christmas Day until the 26th of January. So we just take a whole month off, basically. And even if you're going into work, you're not actually doing any work. You're just going into party and to catch up with people. Yeah. And so, yeah, we just shut down for a whole month.
Well, at least you're making it official. Whereas here, everyone thinks after New Year's Day, you've got to get back to, you know, try and get back to a semblance of normality. But no, it's January's rubbish. You're living a half life almost, don't you?
Yeah.
That's what we should do. We should take the Australian model and go, right, from Christmas until the end of January, parties.
The difference, we have the weather for it.
Oh, yeah, there is that as well. Yeah, we don't have the weather for that.
You don't want to go swimming in your pools in January.
No, you don't. You don't. Mind you don't want to go out without a hat in January in Sydney.
No, okay, yeah, fine.
Actually, I wasn't referring to that. I just remembered I went to watch the Waratahs play. Rugby Union.
Yep.
They were playing Queensland Reds, is it? I think. I didn't have a hat on and it was cloudy. So I was like, oh, I've got a hat. And I was ill for a week after with sunstroke. Gosh. Ridiculous. I had loads of factor 50 on, but I didn't have a hat on. And oh, God, I was ill after for about a week with sunstroke. Yeah. And I remember like every time we went out, you have to put factor 50 on just to go to the shops. You know, it was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I just remembered that about, getting sunstroke in Sydney.
So what are the roles you still yearn to play? What are you keen to still do?
It's work, to be honest.
Just work.
Just work. At the moment, yeah, it's just work. I mean, ambition is fine, but, you know, it gets harder as you get older to get the parts. You know, it seems on TV now, or film, everyone's like under 20 or under 25. So it's trying to get those parts, but it depends what's being written, you know. And as I say, theatre's still not up and running properly. So, but yeah, Macbeth. I'd like to play him. I'd understudied actually with Patrick Stewart. I was playing a good role of Ross, but they asked me, would you mind covering him? So I went on stage as Macbeth a few times in the West End, and I'd like to do that part, I think, properly.
What is it like being the understudy of Patrick Stewart and going on stage when everyone's there to see Patrick Stewart?
Oh God, that was something else. Well, the thing was, it wasn't meant to be an understudy because in Chichester, where we started the play, it wasn't understudies. But they said, because they go to the West End, we haven't got understudies, but we'll pay you more. Do you mind covering? Because you know that you only man of that bracket who can do it, that age or whatever, or So I went, oh, all right, then, okay, I'll probably never have to go on. And then we did the West End, and for various reasons, Patrick got to go off. And basically, all you could do with these nuns, you just learn, you learn the lines and just follow their moves and follow their general sort of demeanor, and as opposed to making the part your own. So I went on, and it was, that was a great buzz, tremendous buzz. But obviously, a lot of people come to see Patrick Stewart. So a lot of people demanded their money back. A lot of people stayed. And luckily, I turned the tannoy off before I went on stage, because apparently there was going to be like a few people protesting the fact that they were watching, and they made all these journeys, and Patrick wasn't on. They were going to protest during the show. And if I'd known that, I would have gone to pieces. But luckily, there was a few people who I know who sort of stood up and said, listen, you give him a chance, blah, blah, blah. And luckily, I had a few mates in who were, let's just say, quite big and physically big. So, you know, I think a couple of people were warned not to do anything. I was told after.
Those Trekkies, I don't know.
They were exactly. The Trekkies. But a couple of people were, you know, they made this journey, and I think they couldn't get their money back for some reason. I can't remember what it was, but so they were going to protest. But I was given, I was given a tremendous reaction, because look, it was, and some people would want to see that. Oh, someone's just thrust into this part at a moment's notice. Some people want to see that and support it, you know, because you're with the actor, aren't you? Then going, you know, willing them to remember their lines and stuff. I think I knocked 20 minutes off the play. I think by just so fast, you know, because my adrenaline was rushing. I remember my shirt was soaking wet after, and I really hit the town that night.
The play is too long anyway. Taking off 20 minutes would be fine.
It's not too. Actually, it's one of the shortest plays actually. Macbeth. But yeah, Shakespeare, yeah. Usually it's, you know, I go into the theatre sometimes, you go, how long's the first half? An hour and a half. You go, what? You know. Sometimes you go to the theatre and about 5 minutes in, you're going, oh, do you know what? I just want a beer now. But, and then sometimes you see stuff that's just 4 hours long and just blows you away, you know.
Yeah. My son was in a production of Macbeth. And so I got to watch him get murdered several times. It's really quite...
Who's he playing?
He's the son that they kill.
Yes. Macduff's son.
Macduff's son.
Yeah.
And,
Little Egg, I think.
Yes. So yeah. watching your son get his, you know, they big throat cut and blood everywhere. Yeah. And it was actually I find it quite harrowing. But
yeah. How many times did you watch it?
I saw that production. I mean, I've seen Macbeth 20 times, probably more. But that production I saw 3 times.
Well, you were glutton for punishment then.
Yeah, I know. No, actually, yeah.
It must be quite harrowing seeing your son being stabbed to death on stage.
But I'm sure you've died many times, I'm sure.
Yes, I have. I've killed people on stage and died on stage. Literally and metaphorically, several times.
Well, one person you brought back to life for us is the Third Doctor. So thank you so much for doing that. It's really enjoyable listening to you do that performance. So,
great pleasure.
Yeah, really appreciate you taking the time to have a chat with us today, Tim.
Thank you very much. I've really enjoyed it. And thank you so much for having me.
Did you notice anything odd about that policeman?
No. Why?
He seemed strangely blank.
From Big Finish Productions, The Third Doctor Adventures, The Annihilators.
There's no way out. We're trapped.
What happened with the TARDIS?
There was an odd surge of... Well,
of what?
Gravity.
Gravity?
Oh, my giddy aunt. What's that? I'm hallucinating. I must be.
They say that talking to yourself is the first sign of madness.
What? But...
Still, let's hope you appreciate the gravity of the situation. Gravity.
Doctor!
Jamie! It's so good to see you.
You too.
Oh, we better keep our voices down.
Big Finish for the love of stories.
Well, there you go. Our first Doctor on the Sirens of Audio, Philip. How was that for you?
Yeah, it was fantastic. But mind you, Peter Purvis was kind of our first Doctor.
Okay. All right. Second Doctor. Our second Doctor.
But no, it's someone who's, yeah, is playing the role alone. He's suddenly there as the Doctor. Yeah, Tim's a great guy. Lots of experience. Yeah, it was great chatting with him.
I love what he does. I love what he does with the Third Doctor range. It's a must-have for me. It's a non-negotiable release whenever they come out. I've got to get them. So, and Tim's got a huge part to play in that.
Yep, indeed.
So, let's go into our recommendations. And you know what, Philip? Do you know whose turn it is?
Whose turn is it?
It's your turn.
No, are you sure?
I'm positive.
Okay, well, there you go. I'm going to recommend A Companion Chronicles, which stars, believe it or not, Tim Treloar. because, yeah, long before we didn't actually talk about a lot of the earlier stuff he did. But one thing he did was, with Peter Purvis, he did Return of the Rocket Men. And so...
Yes, I noticed that. That was one that I was going to listen to before the interview, but I chose a different one, so...
Well, there you go. So, yeah, so the Rocket Men, there's two Rocket Men in the Companion Chronicles, one with William Russell, Peter Purvis does the other one.
Two in the Companion Chronicles, and then there's a fourth Doctor one, isn't there?
And there's a fourth Doctor one too, which is also
so
really
full cast.
Good.
The Rocket Men are really good, actually, all those stories.
Yeah, yeah. So they were a wonderful invention of Matt Fitton. And he uses them really well. So, yeah, so it's Peter Purvis. It's also got the character of Dodo's in it. Peter Purvis is playing, of course, the First Doctor, as well as Stephen. But Tim Treloar's playing the Rocket Man, the baddie, in the piece.
Yep.
And they actually interplay off each other really well. It's a really great story.
Well, that sounds good. I might throw in a trailer for that right here.
Coming soon from Big Finish Productions. Doctor Who, The Companion Chronicles. Return of the Rocket Men.
When do you know? When do you know it's time to move on? To let go? When it's the right moment to take charge of your life? When do you know?
Stay in there and you won't get hurt!
Oh no. The Rocket Men. Happy birthday, Stephen. Dodo grinned and handed me the package.
I think Stephen regrets letting us in on the date's significance.
We'd left the TARDIS and were walking across the sand towards a red rocky mountain ridge.
So, where is everyone? Dodo asked. It is most unusual. Perhaps the project has been abandoned for some reason. Maybe they're hiding from something.
I was closing in. I slowed the thrusters, pulled back to a safe distance. Careful not to get too near the wake of the Rocket Men's transporter.
Stephen! Doctor!
It was Dodo. She was struggling, hands and feet bound, clamped in a vice-like grip under the leader's arm.
You're animals! Worse than animals!
Can animals do this?
Subscribers get more at bigfinish.com.
So, Dwayne, tell me, what do you want to recommend?
Well, I'm going to recommend something that features Tim Treloar as well.
No, and what a coincidence.
Yeah, well, I spoke about it during the interview, and it's Destination Nerva. So a couple of landmark appearances there. It's Tim Treloar's first appearance in Big Finish. And it is also the very first Fourth Doctor adventure. Can you believe? How many years has it been now? Is this season 11 that we're up to?
I think it is.
Coming up shortly?
Yep.
Of Tom Baker?
Well, this is 2012. So Destination Nerva was released 10 years ago today, or within the last day.
Where did that time go?
We're waiting for him to come to Big Finish for so long, and he's done 10 years.
That's amazing.
And so much stuff in 10 years. And has 10 years of stuff recorded, for that matter.
Pretty much. So Destination Nerva is a really good one. Tim's got plays the villain, of course, one of the villains, and it takes place like... moments, well, it actually, they recreate the last moments of the Talons of Wang Chiang. So that's why if you look on the cover of Destination Nerva, they've still got their Talons of Wang Chiang outfits on, goes straight into that. But yeah, interesting concept in that story. I really like this one. It had been so long since I'd heard it, I didn't remember the detail of it, but I love it. And the sound, the story's great. The sound design is awesome. It's got throwbacks to Revenge of the Cybermen and the Ark in Space, because we're going back to Nerva Beacon. It's not called Nerva Beacon in this. I can't remember off the top of my head what it's called, but it's called Nerva something. So yeah, that's my pick. Destination Nerva.
Yeah, it's a good pick. Actually, I've been a while since I've listened to that. I might listen to it this week.
Great start to the series. All right, that'll do us for this instalment. Thanks for joining me, Philip. But no, I know it was a hard one for you to sit in on.
It was awful. Thanks for organising it. Yeah. Mate. It was a great guest to have.
No worries. All right, until next time, guys, we will catch you later. This has been the Sirens of Audio, Episode 92, The Third Man, with our special guest Tim Treloar and your hosts Philip Edney and Dwayne Bunny. Theme music by the Jackpot Golden Boys. Thanks for dropping some feedback for us if you're listening, and a like if you're watching. We really appreciate it. Our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram handles are all at Audio Sirens. And our website is sirensofaudio.com. Now, if you're ever having trouble listening to quality audio drama, just reverse the polarity. Works every time. Because audio drama...